We'll call this meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. The clerk will note the roll. We, as the clerk does note the roll, we know that we are short of a quorum, but we're going to go ahead and get started with testimony. And we're changing the lineup a little bit because Representative Howes has to go to Ways and Means, so we're going to hear his two bills first. We're going to start with House File 632, and as soon as we have a quorum, we will make this official. Representative Howes, welcome to the committee. Please start explaining your bill whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe you have a delete all amendment, DE1.
We do. I will move House File 632 and the delete all amendment to House File 632 as well, so it's properly before us.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I need to make an oral amendment to it. And I was showed, but I just lost the spot. The fee was $100 in the amendment, but we're going to change it to $40. And
which page is that on?
That's what I'm waiting for right
okay.
now.
Okay.
There it is. I'm sorry. It's on page 7, line 6, where it says $100. We talked to the commissioner, and $40 is what it should be.
You have that amendment?
Can you incorporate that?
I will incorporate that into the author's amendment. Representative Howes, is there a fiscal impact to this?
No.
Even with lowering the fee?
Well, it's brand new, and I don't think they've been counting on the money for more than 10 minutes.
Hey, around here,
I don't know. I know. What this?
Do you want to have Mr. Rakowski come down and?
Yes, he can.
Make sure.
What this does is creates a new plumber's license. I'll try to make this as quick as I can.
Okay.
It's basically called a maintenance plumber. And the reason it came about mainly was because of resorts and campgrounds where if someone had the, is it the certified license? Is that what we call the other one? Restricted plumber's license. This license is a little bit different. It will allow someone on their own property, if they pass a test and get the maintenance plumber's license, to be able to do minimal plumbing on their own property. And that's the whole gist of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Howes. And what we are now official, we have enough members to make a quorum, so we are now officially meeting, and we are working on House File 632, the delete all amendment to those that just came in. Mr. Rakowski, is there anything you want to say on the delete all amendment?
Mr. Chairman, John Rakowski with the Department of Labor and Industry. We met with the representative a few weeks ago, and the representative from the department who is in charge of our licensing division suggested that we model this maintenance license after electrical maintenance license that the legislature adopted about 12 years ago, and it's been fairly successful. Think of your school janitor would have that type of restricted license where you can do electrical work at a high school or college. So it's the same type of concept. And we went back, we drafted some different options for the commissioner to consider. And this was the option the commissioner wanted to go with, because he feels that we should tread as lightly as possible, if you will, on the resort owners of Minnesota. And that's what we came up with.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Howes.
There's no opposition at this point in time. The resort folks and Camping Association are not totally in love with it, but they're going to live with it for now and continue to work with the agency. And I might add that if you're up in the deep north area of Coochin County at a resort, that resort owner would be able to repair a toilet if someone attending that resort needed a new toilet.
I just heard from Ms. Newman that the fee would, in addition to applying to, as it's written, to a maintenance plumber, would also apply to the journeyman licenses, journeyman plumber, the up above it on that page, 7.1.
I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to consult with counsel on this because I wasn't sure what the impact would be, but our intention is to have $40 be applied to this new maintenance license.
So only to the maintenance plumber and not to the regular journeyman plumber licenses?
No, that has to stay at that amount, so I apologize for that. That's why I try to stay away from doing verbal amendments, so we could...
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Why don't we, Ms. Newman says we can fix that if we take a second. Do you have somebody else that wants to come up and speak about this? Representative Davids has a question. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the gentleman from the department, does this contain any continuing education language?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Rakowski.
Davids, no, it does not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sir, if you want to come up and shed some light on this amendment, we would greatly appreciate it. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Thaden. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Mechanical Contractors Association. I just got this language just now, and so we'll work with the author on the language. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience, anyone else that wants to speak for or against the delete all amendment? Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering why Representative Davids is so opposed to education.
Okay. Members, Ms. Newman's going to have an oral amendment to fix to make sure that we're charging the 40 just for the maintenance plumber. So, Ms. Newman, if you want to go ahead and share your language.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment would not incorporate Representative Howell's oral amendment.
Okay.
And instead, on line 7.6, we will strike the period and insert a semicolon, and then accept that the fee under this section for a maintenance plumber is $40.
Members, any questions on that amendment? Everybody straight on the oral amendment? Do you want to read that one more time just to make sure everybody's got it, Ms. Newman?
Yes, Mr. Chair. On line 7.6, after $100, insert a semicolon, and then the phrase, accept that the fee under this section for a maintenance plumber is $40.
That sounds good to me. Members, any questions on the delete all amendment? Seeing none, let's vote on the DE1 amendment that to House File 632. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion prevails. We have adopted the delete all amendment. Members, first of all, anybody else in the audience, now that we've adopted that wants to testify on this bill, for or against? Members, any further questions on House File 632? Representative Anzels.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, and thank you. Assuming the mechanical employers are okay with this, I think this is an example of really good cooperation between the department and the resort community that Representative House is trying to provide some relief to. So I hope this works out.
Representative House, and maybe we can get a technical answer on this. We were going to send this to jobs, but can this go straight to Ways and Means?
It could, yes. I thought it would go to the straight to the floor. No.
Well, no, I'd be happy to send it straight to the floor. I agree with Representative Anzels. I think it's common sense and makes sense. But I think with even the small fiscal impact, we want to just dot every I and cross every T and send it
to
Ways and Means. With that, I will amend my motion that House File 632, as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Howes. And now we're on to the next Howes bill, House File 569.
Mr. Chairman, House File 569 just defines and clarifies what a well driller can do. And there's been confusion a couple of years ago with inspectors coming out and say they can't put on a hydrant or they can't hook it to a pressure tank and different court cases, and it's always been kind of a mess. About a year ago, or last session, we changed it, and Representative Mahoney put a sunset on it, And over the course of the interim and the fall and the first part of this session, the plumbers board and the well drillers talked at length and came up with this language that everyone is happy with, and there is absolutely no opposition, not even Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Representative Howes. That was going to be my next question, to find out if Representative Mahoney was okay with this. And
he's co-author.
That's good. I will move House File 569 so it is properly before us. Members, we've heard Representative Howes' brief Peace in the Valley explanation. Any questions? Anybody from the audience want to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, I will remove my notion, renew my motion that House File 569 be recommended to pass and sent on to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Howes. Enjoy your time in Ways and Means. Representative Vogel. Representative Vogel, you can talk about your bill as long as you'd like, but keep in mind that the NCAA championship basketball game starts shortly. So,
yay. Well, I'll keep it short then.
Representative Dowd, would you like to move this bill so it's before us? House
Most
file or Senate file 551.
So moved.
Representative Vogel, Senate file 551 is before us. Please tell us what your bill does and doesn't do.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. This bill basically just allows the city to issue an on-sale wine and on-sale malt liquor license to the owners of a summer league baseball team or its concierge or management contractees for the owner for the sales at the ballpark or the stadium and within a city at the summer league games.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vogel, would this apply just for when you say summer collegiate league? So we're talking players over the age of 21 or?
Well,
could you clarify for me?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon. I'm not going to state that all players are over the age of 21 because some of them are freshmen that come in and play. But it doesn't allow them to drink. It's just for the sale for the fans, basically, in the stands. What we currently have is the law states that they can have 3-2 alcohol there. The problem that we've had in Wilmer with our team is that they have to pre-order the 3-2 beer for the whole season before the season starts. So they have to anticipate. And last year, being our inaugural season in Wilmer, they ordered a lot more beer than what got drank. And so at the end of the season, they can't return that. So they were stuck with all this extra alcohol.
So, Representative Vogel, does that mean the first game this year there's going to be a special?
Who knows? I know there was a big party at the end of the season, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Well, that's helpful. And then just, but would, for high school games, for high school kids, would there be some kind of a separate, because I know with, like, for hockey tournaments, things that are involving high school league players, generally alcoholic beverages are not sold for those events.
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, that's correct. It eliminates anything else other than the summer league, and there's actually, it's called the Northwoods League, that there's about 8 or 10 teams in Minnesota right now. And it just opens it up for the cities to allow the cities to give that. It doesn't allow us to give them that authority. Just gives the authority to the cities to issue the license if they so choose.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Anybody in the audience? Oh, Representative Tilbury.
I just have one question. I was just wondering under statute if this already doesn't exist.
Mr. McCormick.
No, Mr. Chair, the provision that you're looking at in the bill 348-404 sub 1 allows cities to issue on-sale licenses only to specific kinds of organizations, hotels, restaurants, bowling centers, clubs, sports facilities owned by the Metropolitan Sports Commission, and exclusive liquor stores. Therefore, on-sale license at a park would not be allowed under the statute, so we have to create this exemption.
Representative Tilbury, does that answer your question?
I was just looking under the statute, section 340A 4.404 subdivision 4. And it was, I think, Representative Junkie brought that forth last time.
While Mr. McCormick is looking this up, is there anyone in the audience that wants to testify for or against this bill? And I should, Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we have some time, I'll just ask some questions. They're probably already been answered or something, but so this is 8 to 10 summer collegiate teams in the state of Minnesota, and Wilmar is one of them.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Vogel.
Representative, that is correct. It's just one of several.
Okay. Who else? Are these junior college teams, college, Minsky college teams, summer teams?
Representative Dietrich, I can answer that question. The Northwoods League is, it doesn't have anything to do with colleges other than that they use college players. So they'll take kids that go to St. Cloud State or Mankato State or the U, wherever it is, and they're, are they drafted by different teams? Mm-hmm. So they might play for St. Cloud or Wilmer or whatever. The players don't have anything to do with the concession stand or anything else, and they're not there playing for their college. They're just, it's an opportunity for them to play baseball in the summer.
And then just one follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dietrich.
And so what are the typical venues for these games?
Representative Vogel.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, it's basically just they have 70 games during the season, so it's through the summer. It's almost every day. They play 35 home games and 35 away games. And
whoa.
So it's a ball game almost every night. So
I hope they have lots of pitchers.
They do. And we had the pleasure of having one of the players stay with us last year for the season. And wonderful kids. We just had a great experience with them. And that's kind of why they brought this to me and asked me to carry this for them.
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, the differences between 348, 404 sub 4, which is in current statute, and this provision. We adopted 348, 404, sub 4 last year. It allows the governing board of a municipality to authorize on-sale liquor licenses for, and the operative language is, at any convention, banquet, conference, meeting, or social affair conducted on the premises of a sports convention or cultural facility owned by the municipality. And this provision allows a license to go to a person who is owner of a summer league college baseball team or a person holding a concessions or management contract with the owner. So the locus of the license is different. The locus in sub 4 is to a facility owned by the municipality. And so this provision, as I read it, would allow a license to be held in a facility that's not owned by the municipality.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. McCormick. And I should say Representative Atkins is going to be the author of the liquor bill, and I did ask him about this. The only reason we're doing this one instead of doing it with all the other liquor bills is there's somewhat of a sense of urgency. The city of Wilmer needs to get this done so that they can, I don't know, not order a truckload of 3-2 beer or something. But anybody else? We've heard a lot of testimony. Any questions, members? Anybody else want to speak for or against? Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel, I wonder if you'd consider a friendly amendment to offer drinking at the Gopher Stadium.
Seeing none.
For all.
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair, I would not like to put that amendment on, please. At this point, let's keep this one clean.
Thank you for your answer, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Well, members, with that, Representative Doubt will renew his motion that Senate File 551 be passed and sent on to the General Register. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you,
Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Stenzer, will you move the minutes from the March 15th meeting, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would move those minutes.
Representative Stensrud moves the minutes from the March 15th meeting. Any comments or questions, members? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Stensrud. Representative Anderson, welcome. If you want to give us the thumbnail sketch, if you want to move your bill and then tell us what it is and what it does, we would be appreciative.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Hoppe. I'd like to move House File 1195. And, folks, what all this bill does is it allows industrial loan and thrift entities to charge fees to a borrower to cover costs associated with accepting certain items as collateral. For example, if they had to take care of somebody's boat as part of a collateral, they would be able to charge fees for the insurance to have that boat or storage fees and everything else. So that's all that this bill does.
And Representative Anderson, we have a DE1 amendment. Is that the author's amendment?
It is.
Would you like to go ahead and move that?
I'd like to move the DE1 amendment.
And give us a brief explanation of what the amendment does, unless that was the explanation before.
It's the same thing. It just makes it more clear and distinct.
Members, any questions on the DE1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The DE1 amendment is adopted to the bill as amended. Do you want to have Mr. Cassidy speak, or is there anyone else that wants to come up and speak for or against this bill? Mr. Elwood? Come on up when you're ready, sir. Mr. Elwood, you have been here before. Welcome back. Please identify yourself for the record and let us know what you want us to know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. First of all, I want to thank Representative Anderson and Mr. Cassidy, who graciously shared this amendment with me earlier. So, of course, one thing that the amendment does is carve out the payday lending loans. So this would not apply to payday loans. So that's a good thing. We appreciate that. Just want to point out to the committee, the way we read the bill, it's not certainly limited to any collateralized loan, so it's applicable to any loan. And the phrase on line 2.15, including without limitation, any fees and charges would appear to us to be breathtakingly broad and essentially rendering moot some of the limitations in the paragraphs above it. So essentially, this is a free pass to charge any fees or as much as you want. And so I just want to make sure the committee is aware that that's what this bill does. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood. Members, any questions for Mr. Elwood? Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's to say this blows open the whole statutes that we have for protection of people, and seems to me to be quite worth thinking about. And then I have another question: does this affect in any way what has to be included on any disclosure statements? Does it have any effect on that at all? As you know, there's various rules as far as disclosure and what the effective rate, because normally some of these things are considered part of basically your interest for it.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Representative Mullery, if you look in the new language on there, it's very clear that it has to be as part of the contract between the licensee and the borrower. Well, so that will be outlined to them so
Mr.
they are
Chairman,
fully aware.
And Representative Anderson, that doesn't answer the question at all as to whether that has to be included in the rates and things like that that are required by disclosure. And I don't know if anybody knows that.
Well, Mr. Chair, the way I would read this, it would...
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry.
We have Mr. Cassidy here. He could speak to that.
Okay. Well, Mr. Elwood, go ahead, and then we'll bring Mr. Cassidy up.
Well, the way I would read this is that it would not... it would be outside of the scope of the truth in lending requirements because it's not interest, so it would not be disclosed in that portion of the disclosures.
Mr. Cassidy, welcome. If you could identify yourself to the record and help us out on this one, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Cassidy with Leonard Street and Diner here on behalf of the Rixman Companies. We would disagree with Mr. Elwood. All the federal truth in lending requirements would apply to this kind of transaction.
Mr. Pender, do you can you shed any light on this?
Mr. Chair, no, not without doing research. I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head.
Okay. Members, any other questions? Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, the charges and fees to me look almost limitless. It just seems it's whatever the two parties agree to. I'm sure your answer to that idea would you would not be in agreement with that, but can you tell me, is there anything that you envision that would not be permitted in the category of a fee increase here? I mean, is there anything that would not be allowable?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anzo. I appreciate the question. During session today, Mr. Elwood came to me and said that he had concerns with that. Now, I know the bill had been posted for 3 days, but I didn't hear from him until today. I'm more than willing to work with him on the issue of concern as far as limitation, and I think one way we can do that is if the Mr. Chair will permit removing the language on 2.15 without limitation, those two words, and I think we can address those concerns.
Representative Anzels, is that
good?
And do we have that? And I'm happy to take that as an author's amendment. Any questions on that, members? Does everybody know what we're doing? Representative Anderson is going to, on line 2.15, remove two words, the words without and without without and limitation. Mr. Pender, does that make sense? Do we need to move a comma or add an and or take out an and or anything? Get rid of the comma after limitation, maybe?
Mr. Chair, that would still leave the sentence being such other fees and charges as may be contracted for between a licensee and a borrower, comma, including these other fees. So, I mean, I don't read that as excluding other fees. It still would be allowing any fees that are if it said including only. And that would do it, but otherwise, I think it still could be interpreted at least as allowing any fees that were agreed to between the licensee and the borrower.
But does having the words without limitation out of there make a difference? That, you know, does that make members of the committee feel better?
No, it's terrible.
Well, Mr. Chair, we can certainly.
Okay.
We can certainly do including only. Application fees, underwriting fees, as Mr. Pender suggested.
Okay. Representative Johnson or Representative Mullery, do you want to... removing the words without limitation and putting the word only in there, in their place?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that doesn't solve the whole problem, and Representative Anderson said charges like insurance, but we already have exceptions for that in two places in the statutes. The purpose of this statute is to... Basically, and I had a lot of experience on this, there's specific charges that you have that are allowed by this statute, and each of them has a part. If you look and read through the statute here from Subdivision 6, each of them is for a certain amount of work, and there's a reasonable value on that. What this is doing is suddenly saying, we can charge application fees no matter what percentage of the mortgage, underwriting fees, whatever. It's if I'm doing this, I can suddenly charge an application fee of 20%, 25%, and suddenly that's allowed, whereas everything else in this whole statute, if you read the statute, it's got a purpose, and there is a real reason for the statute, and the rest of these are actual fees. I mean, if you look into them, having been at, I have no idea how many hundreds of closings, these are all legitimate actual fees, not just blue sky, which application fee can be, for instance. So service fee can be anything. Basically, we're kind of gutting the statute by allowing them to charge whatever they want and call them one of these.
Well, Representative Mullery, my question would be, if you look on the first page where it has all the different list of things that can be charged for fees, there's nothing in there that says how much they can charge for any of these that I'm seeing.
No, but if, Mr.
Representative Mullery,
if you were in the business, you would know what reasonable fees are for these things, and they're for actual work that's being done. An application fee, I remember before there was rules, I go back that far, they'd charge a percentage of the mortgage, which was sometimes extremely high.
But Representative Mullery,
if you go down this, there's for following closing costs, and then there's the charge for insurance, official fees and taxes like mortgage registration or the recording fee. Fees for a premium title insurance, that's a specific thing that's done. Those rates are governed. Fees for preparation of deed are pretty standard.
Well, Representative Mullery, with the words pretty standard, I mean, if we look at the fees on the front page, it doesn't say anywhere on the front page anything about without limitation. So if we take those words out and put in the word only, doesn't that kind of put these fees into the same category?
Mr. Chairman, no, it doesn't, because an application fee can be just anything. The others, for instance, like I was saying, the title insurance, that actually they have to file their rates with the Commerce Department. Escrows for future taxes. The fees for notarizing deeds is usually like $5, maybe $10 or something on that order. An appraisal and a credit report fee is an actually bill that you get. So you can determine all of those, and they're for work done. An application fee in the past has been just large percentages, just another way of getting more interest in things. That's probably why Mr. Cassidy said that the truth in lending applies then.
Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mullery, I would first point out the obvious, which is all two pages of this bill that you have before you, the litany of fees and charges that you can levy on a loan transaction under 4759, most of them without limitation. As in our business, with these types of loan, collateralized loans, of course we'd have to respond to market forces and what the market rates are. For standard, I looked over the weekend what to rent a 8x22-foot covered enclosed garage at Public Storage, those buildings you see all on the interstates, and I believe it was $147. I doubt that anyone's going to want to pay much more than that, or much less than that. So, market forces are going to have an impact on this as well, and people are going to walk away if it doesn't make sense for them to do these types of loans.
Well, Mr. Cassidy and Representative Mullery and members, what if where the words without limitation are now? What if we put in the word reasonable?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
We were just talking as this whole conversation was going, and I think to make it more clear, including and limited to application fees, underwriting fees, processing fees, service fees, and storage fees to do that. The only concern that I have in using the term reasonable, as we've had this conversation ad nauseum in this committee, is what does reasonable truly mean? And I think that will open the door to more litigation and actually not achieve what our goal is overall.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, in the language that Representative Anderson offered in no way limits it, so that doesn't help at all. The word reasonable might. I'd have to think about that. But the language they offered wouldn't in any way. I think your suggestion of reasonable at least would be better than this by quite a bit.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Anderson, just a couple of questions for you. I think that the spirit intent of what you're trying to do here is really not get into the consumer-related aspect of this. You're talking about the collateral portion of this, and maybe what the language needs to be is more directed toward fees associated with the maintenance and upkeep of the collateral item, including such things as da-da-da-da-da. That may be the genesis of the language that will help us get to where Mr. Representative Mullery is feeling a comfort level and just kind of listening to the dialogue today. So I just offer that as a suggestion.
Representative Andrew or Representative Stensrud?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's Representative Anderson or the testifier. It's my understanding these fees would be shown to a customer who's engaging in a contract. I mean, if they're going to take a loan on a pontoon boat, I mean, you'd know up front what any of these fees we're discussing, right? It's not a top secret thing. Is that correct?
Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's absolutely correct. It would receive a one-page document that would itemize all the fees and charges on that loan transaction.
Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That answers my question.
Thank you. Well, Representative Anderson, maybe we can do this. In the interest of time and moving things along, and I will ask if there are any others that want to speak for or against this bill, but if we pass this out and send it on its way, will you continue to meet with Mr. Elwood? Mr. Elwood, will you go find Representative Anderson and see if we can come to a conclusion that will get us to the elusive peace in the valley, the sometimes elusive peace in the valley? Representative Mullery, is that okay with you if they keep working on this?
Mr. Chairman, I think we need to keep working on it, and otherwise it'll be a huge fight on the floor, too. So if we can reach Representative Davids, as I recall, was the original Peace in the Valley guy. So
I was thinking of no other. Representative Johnson, do you have a question of this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like the idea of working on it some more. I think you definitely need to work. And Representative Anner, what is the reason for this bill again, or what are you trying to fix with it?
Yeah. Representative Anderson.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson. Perhaps you were gone at that point. The impetus for this bill is for those companies that are providing these loans, there are fees that they have to swallow, basically, for collateral that's put up. So say, for example, you're going to get a loan and you put up for collateral your boat. Well, for the entity to store that boat, there's costs with that as well as any insurance costs and so forth. So this would allow them to recoup the loss that they would have in storing the item that you have put up for collateral.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, that isn't what we're limiting. We're going way, way, way beyond that. If what you're talking about, insurance is already in here in a couple of places, and storage, the things you keep talking about are fine if we limit it to those kinds of things. I have no problem with that whatsoever. It's these unlimited kinds of fees like application fees, which I've seen going back. I actually go back before the TIL, and so I've seen those huge. So that's what I'm complaining about. If you want to limit it to the types of things that are in here, just like title insurance, all those kinds of things that are actual costs that they're doing, I have no problem with that.
Well, Representative Johnson, did you have a follow-up? And Representative Anderson, you'll continue to work on this with Mr. Elwood. Is there anyone else that wants to testify for or against this bill? Anyone in the audience? If not, members, I think we should send this on its way and let it continue to get worked on and get the issues taken care of before it gets to the floor. I think we adopted the amendment. Did we adopt the amendment? Well, let's just to be on the safe side, let's vote again. I think we adopted the DE1 amendment, but
yep,
I thought we did. Okay.
Did we adopt the amendment to the DE1 amendment?
The oral amendment, I don't know that we ever reached a conclusion on removing the words without limitation. Do you want to just leave it as it is and continue to talk to Mr. Elwood about that?
Yeah, you know what? That would probably be best.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then we will, Representative Anderson will renew her motion that House File 1195 be, as amended, be passed and sent on to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Anderson, and thank you for your willingness to continue to work on this.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
No, that's my confusion. Representative Sanders, we are doing your House File 1152, the pawnbroker's bill. If you would like to move that bill so that it's properly in front of us, we will start to work on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 1152 to pass and be placed on the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Sanders. Please proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chair, I have an oral amendment that I'd like to offer and incorporate.
Go ahead with your oral amendment.
Okay. On line 2.14, we're going to strike 22 and insert 31.
I'm sorry, did you say 31?
31.
31. Thank you. Members, does everyone have that oral amendment? On line 2.14 of the bill, we are striking the number 22 at the very end of the sentence, striking the number 22 and adding the number 31 in its place. Representative Sanders, I assume you just want to incorporate that into your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
It's an author's amendment. Then, if you want to go ahead and explain the bill and tell us a little bit about it, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief in order to keep things moving along here. House File 1152 adjusts the statewide standardization of pawn and purchase hold periods and also modifies the distance restrictions on pawn stores near casinos. With me is Mr. Paul Cassidy here, who can help explain things, and then we will stand for further testimony or any questions.
Mr. Cassidy, go ahead and once again identify yourself for the record, and welcome. Glad to have you back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Cassidy with Leonard Street & Dinert here on behalf of Rixman Companies. As Representative Sanders said, House File 1152 is legislation regarding the regulation of pawn stores. This legislation standardizes statewide the period of time that pawn stores are required to hold merchandise. For pawn transactions, that time in this legislation is 60 days for pawned items and 21 days, now 30 with the amendment, for items that are held after being purchased by a pawn store. The 30 days was put in the bill at the request of the police chiefs, the sheriffs, and the city of Minneapolis. Holding merchandise is an expensive proposition for pawn shops, and hold periods have not been revisited for years. The advent of the automated pawn system is now used by most law enforcement jurisdictions around the state and negates the need for long hold periods. The automated pawn system provides law enforcement immediate tracking of these transactions and removes the need for long hold periods. This legislation also states that the change exclusively supersedes local ordinances in order to preserve a standard application statewide of the hold periods. And finally, this legislation takes the distance restriction for which a pawn store can locate near a casino down from 10 miles to 1,500 feet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Cassidy. And members, I am not entirely sure, but I think I might have screwed up. So to the oral amendment, when we changed on line 2.14, when we changed it from 22 to 31, just to be on the safe side, let's vote on that, just to make sure that is we're dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's. Any questions about that amendment, 22 to 31? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. The amendment is passed. I don't know if we were okay the other way, but just to be on the safe side. Members, any questions for the author or for Mr. Cassidy? Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question has to do with Section 2. I believe there are 17 casinos, all regulated under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, and I believe all or most of those facilities are located on Indian trust land, which means this is sovereign Indian land. How does this 1,500 feet impact the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act? How does it impact sovereignty? How does it impact self-determination by the tribes to govern what goes on commercially in their own, on their own land?
Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't believe this does impact that whatsoever in terms of Indian Nation sovereignty. If a Indian Nation chose to locate a pawn shop on its property, it certainly would have every right to.
Well, Mr. Chair, follow up. I don't see any language about tribal ownership of the pawn shop. I don't see any language relative to the tribal council authorizing these businesses to be located on Indian Trust land. And I would just, rather than force us into a conflict here down the line, I would think that some of those questions should be answered, and I would have trouble voting for this without the knowledge that the tribes were consulted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anzels, it's my understanding that this is still up to the local jurisdiction, so whether it be whatever city they're in or the tribal governments, they would have the authority whether or not to approve a license or a permit for a pawn shop to be located wherever it's located. So this would have to be something that would be agreed upon by, if it was going to be on sovereign lands, by those that have jurisdiction over that, over those lands.
Representative Anzels.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that explanation, Representative Sanders. Just to make it clear here and for the record that it would be the sovereign tribal government in the case where this 1,500 feet distance is within Indian tribal trust land, it would be the tribal government that would be authorized to make that decision whether or not to allow this business to exist on its land, not the municipality, which in some cases encompasses tribal trust land. This gets these relationships between tribes and sovereignty in the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act tends to get a little complicated here, and I'm just trying to avoid the author some pain down the road here.
Representative Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, first and foremost, obviously, I think Native American laws and sovereignty is going to overrule everything. Number two, we'd be more than happy to work with you on this. And number three, we have talked to many of the tribes who have had no problem with this. In fact, the number one question is, where did this come from, meaning the 10-mile barrier? And the best that we can surmise from looking back at history is that this was during a time when gaming was expanding in the state. Everybody was a little bit giddy and paranoid about that expansion, and we thought we needed to create barriers between vices. Now, with that said, this is the only thing we can find in statute where there is that type of barrier, whether it's liquor stores or what have you, or ATMs or banks or anything else, that we try to create barriers between access to cash and a casino. So that's kind of a long answer to your question, but we're more than happy to work with you, Representative. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
I think, Mr. Chair, I might have had my question answered. I was just unclear what the purpose was of the change from 10 miles to 1,500. That in effect was it, I guess. Huh?
I think that was it. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, one other question on Section 3. What does that exactly do?
Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, Section 3 basically answers the question of we're trying to standardize these hold periods across the state, so cities that have, this would supersede any local ordinances, but allow cities obviously to have in their ordinances hold periods, but they could not exceed 30 days for a purchased item or 60 days for a pawned item.
Representative Johnson,
because the intent of the legislation is to standardize these between jurisdictions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a municipality can make tougher laws in the state or not?
Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, actually, they could not. This would supersede the local ordinance, and they could not exceed 60 days. It's standardized at 60 days and at 30 days for purchased items. Right now, across jurisdictions, at least with our client, these hold periods are different as you go to each municipality, so they have to keep track of that inventory differently from one city to the next, and we would like to have that standardized. One reason to have that standardized is because it's easier now for law enforcement to track these transactions because of the automated pawn system. Each night, our client has to download pawn and purchase transactions overnight into a database, which is run by the Minneapolis Police Department and has access to by all law enforcement officials from around the state to subscribe to the system.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And lastly, I know pawn shops have been a hot item in St. Paul, for example. Have they weighed in on this at all, cities of the first class or St. Paul? Have they given any opinion on?
Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, the city of Minneapolis, we've discussed this bill with today, and I've also talked to the league. That's why we put in the 30 days standardization. They wanted a little bit more time. And so far, I believe they're okay with this. I haven't heard anything further.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess that gets at one of my questions. I have two questions, and the one question had to do with Section 3, and I guess is the lead on the local government or the government operations committees, it's called this year. We haven't seen this bill, and this has an effect on local government ordinances. And I think this should go there to be seen by at least these issues discussed in the Government Operations Committee. And is there any intention on having it go there? I think the motion was to send it to the floor.
That's Representative Nelson. I think that's the current motion. Representative Sanders, have you talked to the chair of that committee, or what are your thoughts?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I have not been contacted by Representative Pepin or the CA of Government Operations Committee. However, I have no problem sending it there if it's agreed that that's where it needs, you know. I guess it, as the lead on that committee, if you'd like to see the bill in Government Operations, I don't have a problem bringing it there next before we bring it to the floor.
Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it should, because it has an effect on government operations and ordinances, and we should send it, at least it should be looked at there and before it goes to the floor, because I don't, like I said, it has some effect there, so especially as we're superseding ordinances that any cities might have and municipalities might have.
Well, Representative Nelson, do you want us to recommend it or to pass it and send it there, or do you want to talk to the chair, and if you guys, the two of you, decide that it should be seen in GovOps, have it re-referred from the General Register back to committee? I wouldn't have a problem either way.
Why don't we have I'll talk to Chair Pepin and go that way, and we'll have it brought back if she thinks it has to be seen there, because
okay.
I think it should be.
So we're okay sending it to the General Register for now?
For right now.
Okay.
My other question had to do with, Mr. Chair, had to do with the Section 2 and gambling casinos, and is this just getting at, I mean, what's the definition of gambling casinos? Does this include bingo halls? Are they a gambling casino? Does this include if the card clubs that are at the racetracks, or is it just going at the gambling casinos that are on the reservations currently?
Well, Representative Nelson and members, and I could be corrected here by our legal counsel, but it's my understanding that this would only apply to casinos and not to card clubs and not to bingo and not to anything like that. It also could apply to casinos that aren't located in the state of Minnesota. I don't know how, but technically it could if there's one in a river, if there's one on a border. But I don't think that's the case right now, and I think it's just right now strictly for the casinos that we have. Representative Nelson.
Or Mr. Chair, what if with the rumored and the much talked about Racino bills come down, and would they be included in this? Or if there was a, you know, there's been talked about casinos at the airport, casinos at the Mall of America, casinos everywhere. I guess that's the question I have.
And I could be corrected on this, but it is my belief that if a casino, a racino passed at Canterbury, for example, that then would apply to them, and you couldn't have a pawn shop within 1,500 feet of the racetrack at Canterbury.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Sanders.
Just for clarification, too, that is existing statute as is of right now, and as those bills or ideas or concepts become tangible, then it'd have to be something we'd have to look at. But again, just for the record, we're not adjusting or inserting gambling at casinos. That is current language.
And Representative Van Zels has indicated that he agrees. So, you know, two eminent legal scholars like us. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If our legal counsel, Representative Van Zels, agrees, then that's over.
Don't forget me, prominent attorney.
I think there is a reason here. We were trying to protect people that have a gambling addiction from getting rid of, you know, they could do anything. They could get rid of huge property. And so I think there's probably, first of all, a good reason for not having it so handy. But I'm also concerned about, while it says that Mr. Cassidy's statement was that it doesn't affect local governments regulating it, sometimes we've been seen laws that the courts have held say, well, your zoning or whatever doesn't take precedence over this if they meet everything else. I guess I'd like to hear from cities as to whether there's any possibility that this could keep them from keeping out a pawn shop near a casino or something like that.
Representative Mullery, in our all-seeing wisdom, we anticipated that you might have this question, and we just happen to have someone that's willing to come down and give us a city's answer. Thanks for being ready, and come on out.
Very good. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities, and we were able to take a look at this bill today, and I've been working with Mr. Cassidy. We are very appreciative that they were willing to change the number on lines line 2.14 to extend it to 31 days, I believe. But I did want to put on the record that in the last couple of days we have heard from some cities, not a large number, but anytime we make changes to pawn regulations, there's some anxiety out there because law enforcement and others in the city community have a pretty wide array of relationships with the pawn shops within their communities. We know there are some really good people out there that are abiding by the rules, that are trying to work with law enforcement so that stolen property is not being transacted. But then there are some others where folks have some heartburn when they work with those businesses. So we do still have some concerns about sections 2 and 3 with the bill. We don't know if 1,500 feet is the best number in terms of the distance between a casino and a pawn shop. I don't know that 10 miles is the best number either, but it would be nice if this could go to the local government committee so that we could kind of work that out and get some more feedback from the folks that regulate these businesses at the local level. And then finally, I would say that Section 3 probably will cause some concerns by the city attorneys that are trying to work on ordinances to regulate their local pawn shops if there's a standard throughout the state that they can't vary from.
Thank you. Representative Mullery.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, that raises a lot of concern on my part about what the, unless we have something clear, Ms. Finn has indicated that it seems that there might be some real problems on this, and unless we can get an assurance from good city attorneys that wouldn't be a problem, I think this is going to could have very bad ramifications.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mullery, I appreciate that. And the one other comment I wanted to make is that we also don't have a lot of experience with casinos. So this relationship between pawn shops and casinos is sort of a new concept for local governments, and that's something that we'll probably need a little feedback on as well.
Well, Representative Mullery and members and Ms. Finn, we've already talked with Representative Nelson about talking to Chair Pepin and seeing if she wants to see it. What if we pass this, send it to the General Register, and drag feet until we make sure that everybody is okay, and let Representative Sanders talk to the people from the cities and the attorneys and law enforcement and make sure that I think he wants to pass a bill that everybody likes as well. And Representative Nelson, are you still okay with that? And if you and Chair Pepin decide you want to see it, Representative Sanders has indicated he wouldn't have a problem with that. Representative Sanders, is that okay with you?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's just fine. Whatever whatever we work out with Chair Pepin and Representative Nelson is, okay. Is just fine. I have no problems sending there if we need to.
Okay. Members, any other questions? Anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Sanders will renew his motion that House File 1152, as amended, be passed and sent on to the General Register. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Sanders, and thanks for your willingness to work with Representative Nelson and Representative Pepin and Ms. Finn and Mr. Cassidy and everybody. Thank you, Mr. Cassidy. Thank you, Ms. Finn. Last bill on the agenda for the day, Representative Sanders, House File 837. If you want to go ahead and move that bill so it is before us.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, of House File 837, be recommended to pass and we move on to the General Register. Is that, I believe that's the correct motion.
Yes, I believe it is going to the General Register. And just to correct the record, I think I said 857. It is 837. You were correct, but in case I misstated it, it is House File 837.
Very good.
And members, this is the air admittance valve bill. I don't know when it was, 2-3 weeks ago, when we had testimony in this. We laid the bill over and did not vote on it because Mr. Crimmins was out of town and not able to testify. The bill is back before us, and he is out of town, not still, but again. And Mr. Johnson is going to come and speak to a couple of words on his behalf. Whenever you are ready, sir, please identify yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you. My name is Dave Johnson. I'm an attorney at the law firm of Best and Flanagan, and I represent the Minnesota Pipe Trades. First of all, Mr. Crimmins apologizes for not being able to be here again tonight and appreciates the committee's indulgence in trying to give him a chance to testify because I take direction well and understand that people have other things to do tonight. I'll be brief and won't try to restate some of the testimony that was there before. The Minnesota Pipe Trades, like some of the other groups, opposes this bill. They share the same concerns of some of the other groups that have testified about the effectiveness of this device. They do believe that this device has had a number of hearings and public testimony in a number of forums. This will be the third time that it's gone through the legislative process. It's been in the subject of two separate lawsuits, the first which I think is worth noting, which is after the precursor to the Plumbing Advisory Board was the Plumbing Advisory Council, and three times the Plumbing Advisory Council took a look at this issue, and three times they rejected it. At that point, the department tried to allow this device to be implemented anyway. That resulted in a lawsuit that was brought by my client that questioned whether a rule could be promulgated that way. And my client ultimately prevailed in that lawsuit. And I only bring that up to point out that one of the concerns we have is, you know, this was put in statute because of concerns that when proponents of this this particular device weren't getting the answer they wanted by the experts, there were we believe that the process, the pipe trades believe that the process was subjected, and that was really the one of the basis for putting this in statute. So those are our concerns, Mr. Chair. Again, we appreciate the opportunity to express them, and if anybody has any questions, I'll try to answer them. Yep.
Members, any questions? We do have a couple of other people that wanted to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Thaden. I'm with the Minnesota Mechanical Contractors Association. I testified on this subject before. I'd heard a rumor that we had changed our position. That is not the case. We still oppose AAB valves. This has been before the plumbing board a number of times, I think three or four times, and it keeps coming back. I would be interested to know if the proponents of this bill would be willing to abide by the plumbing board's decision if it ever gets there again. So that's my testimony.
Thank you, sir. And we always appreciate you testifying. We especially appreciate it when you're brief. That was very nice. Nicely done. Members, any questions? If not, Mr. Thrain, you wanted to come and say a couple of words? Representative Mullery, did you have a question?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to point out that only you can unite ABC and the unions.
Well, it's not me uniting. It's the men's championship basketball game tonight, I think, that everyone is uniting behind. And by the way, members, while we're Mr. Thrain is coming up, there's evidently some people that filled out a pool, and by tradition, evidently the chair of this committee has to buy pizza for anybody that manages to beat the chair's picks in the pool. The chair never actually got his picks in on time, so pretty much anybody that filled out the bracket. We'll be having pizza at 4 o'clock this morning. No, I'm just kidding. We will, to be determined, we'll see who wins, and we'll try to pick a date that works for everybody and figure out a time to have pizza on the chair. Thank you, Mr. Thrain, if you want to go ahead and identify yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you. I'm Peter Thrain from Leonard Street and Dinard. On behalf of IPS Systems, which is the parent company of Studer, the manufacturer of the AAV valve that is the subject of this legislation. I first want to thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for the opportunity to have a hearing on this bill. When the ban was enacted in 2007, it was put in a delete everything amendment. After it was through policy committees, and there was no testimony, we didn't have an opportunity to testify, so I appreciate the opportunity to have this testimony before the committee. This bill is very simple. It simply eliminates a ban on a plumbing device and allows the State Plumbing Board, the agency charged with authority for setting the plumbing code, to consider whether or not to add this to the code. And we'd appreciate your support in that endeavor. Let me just sort of make one final note. AAVs have been installed in public building projects across the country. In your materials, you can see they've been installed in the Denver, Colorado Convention Center, Comerica Park, home of the Detroit Tigers, the Tennessee Coliseum, home of the Tennessee Titans, Ford Field, home of the Detroit Lions, Phillips Arena, home of the Atlantic Hawks, Tropicana Field. And all of these have been done in public facilities, and for a number of reasons, they are an effective solution in a large facility, but also they have an economic development benefit, and they tend to be a very cost-effective alternative to open-stack venting. And as this legislature considers public construction projects, that might be one item to consider, is that an AAV can be a very cost-effective alternative to what can be a costly system of open-stack venting. We appreciate your support, and thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Thrain. Members, any questions? And I know we said we were going to try to limit the testimony, but is there anyone else in the audience that wants to testify for or against this bill? And we had a lot of testimony on this whenever we previously heard it. Seeing none, Representative Sanders renews his motion that House File 837 be passed and sent on to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Sanders. Members, I appreciate the questions. I appreciate everybody being here in a timely fashion and getting through here quickly. With that, we are adjourned. Huh?